Welcome to the latest series of the Women Who Sport podcast. This series is made possible by the support of Boob Armour, who make protective inserts that fit inside a sports bra and protect breast tissue while training or competing. The inserts are lightweight, comfortable and suitable for all sporting activity. Check them out at www.boobarmour.au or through the links on the Women Who Sport social media channels. We're incredibly lucky to be working with a company that are leading the way with the protective equipment offered to female athletes, giving everyone the confidence to participate in sport. On today's episode, we are joined by Gwen Crabb. Gwen made her international debut in 2018 Autumn Series at Cardiff Arms Park against Hong Kong, and since she's achieved 29 caps to date. She's not only a rugby player, she is a qualified PT. She's got a big passion for body image and celebrating strong women and mental health. Excited to get into today's episode with Gwen.
Yes, and this episode, the low of the week is that Mons was not there.
I am so, so sorry. This is definite low of the week. I let my pal down.
Luckily for us, Gwen was brilliant. So easy to talk to. I got by without Mons. But yeah, everybody says your accent's better than mine, but they're going to miss out on that this episode.
Absolutely not. Your accent's great. I was just letting you flourish your wings, you know, fly without me.
I was treading water. I was only just getting by.
Oh, okay.
Okay, high of the week.
High of the week then. Okay, high of the week, Jodie Ansley on Gladiator. How cool. So, so cool.
So cool. We had Jodie on the pod, very briefly over lockdown, didn't we, just to talk about her challenge she was doing to raise money for the Elizabeth Trust, who is a charity that support young deaf people. They supported her when she was younger, but she's just such an incredible woman. She's played rugby in the Prem, she's played rugby for England 7, she's now going to be a gladiator. She just shows that being deaf is absolutely not a barrier to what you can achieve.
Oh, massively incredible. Yeah, couldn't have said it better myself.
Yes, we love Jodie, big Jodie Ansley fans here. So for high of the week, I actually had a couple.
Okay.
So one is that Women's Sports Trust did a post saying that January to April is the most watched viewership in the history of women's sport, with 20.6 million people tuning into women's sport on TV.
That is a huge stat.
Did I explain that well? January to April 2023.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's
amazing.
Massive. And just shows that there is an appetite for it. There is people that, if this is the right marketing, the right accessibility, people want to go and watch the sport. It's sport at the end of the day.
Yeah, absolutely. It's become more accessible, and with it, I think the numbers are shooting, which is so cool. Then other one I had, so maybe a controversial one because it was in spite of GB, but I was so proud to see Ireland qualify for the Olympics last weekend at Toulouse Sevens. So the Olympic qualification in the series, it basically was first four from the series going, not including France, who have already qualified. So going into that final weekend, there was us, Ireland and Fiji that all could have qualified, but Ireland were ahead. And yeah, although obviously with GB, I was going to miss out, and we are now going to go into a different process to qualify for the Olympics. Ireland have been so consistent all year. They missed out on the last two Olympics. This has been an 8-year journey for them with a lot of the same faces, and it was hard not to be really happy for them.
Yeah, no, that is amazing. No, and credit to you for being able to say something like that, because obviously it's heartbreaking, but we've still got another opportunity to qualify down the line, and Ireland have consistently been playing very well on the World Series for a few years now, so hats off. And also I think with what's going on in the 15s as well, it's actually nice to see Ireland have some good media about them.
No, absolutely, such an inspiring journey. I think we'll definitely need to get somebody from that team on the pod at some point in the next series.
Okay, someone else we should get on the pod, an Irish player from the Sevens team, a basketball player. So I was at the basketball finals last weekend for the men's and the women's. It was class. It was at the O2 Arena, pretty much packed out both games. And the women would literally just arrive in like the bougiest clothes ever. I'm like, this is so cool. Like, imagine we did that at rugby and said we're in our Macron. But anyway, it was so, so cool. And I was like, we need to get a female basketballer on the pod.
Yeah,
so there are two people next season you can look forward to hearing about.
Cool. Oh, I didn't know you did that, Bonner. So cool.
Mm.
Talking about being dressed terribly as rugby players, at the end of season Sevens Awards.
Right. I shared a post and I was like, okay, Rolo's in her GB polo. Everyone else
looks amazing.
On clothes. It was like, you forgot the Mufti school day rule.
Honestly, so there was like Australia who just looked incredible. GB and Ireland in their polos. Fiji were in their Fijiana hoodies and basketball shorts. New Zealand all had their tops for Niall Williams. Like, that's an event with no dress code.
Yeah. It is. I did wonder, and I was actually meaning to ask you about that, but I just thought, nah, I'll leave it.
Well, last year I was there with Scotland, and it was only Scotland, Ireland, and England in polos. This year it was only GB and Ireland in polos. Like, I think that we need to read the room. Nobody else is doing it. Why are we persistent?
Yeah. I think maybe next year you ask to go on clothes.
It's time for change.
It's time for change, I agree.
Yes. Okay, right, let's get Gwen on, get Shannon Martin on, and get into the episode. So, Gwen, thanks so much for coming on the podcast. And just to ease in, wanted to ask you, so we're in the Welsh changing room before a big match. Who's on the speaker and what are you guys playing?
Definitely me. Yeah, probably me. If I'm not there, so like this campaign where I've been injured, Cecilia goes on the speaker, but it's quite funny because she messages me before the game being like, can you send me a playlist please for game day? But yeah, what's on the speaker? So recently we've been liking any songs by The Score. I don't know.
Cool.
They've got some really good songs. Another one is I'm Ready. I'm not sure who it's by, but that's Bethan Lewis's favourite song to have on before a game. So that comes on every time in the changing rooms. So yeah.
Sweet. So Cecilia's getting the credit, but actually you're still the brains behind it.
100%, yeah.
Oh, cool. Love that. So yeah, just continuing with Wales. So you've got 29 caps for Wales now. And I think you've been part of the squad during like a massive transitional phase. Like I know 2 years ago in the Six Nations, you guys came sixth, like the programme wasn't in a great place. And now you just came third. You've qualified for the first tier of World XV, which will include automatic World Cup qualification. So like really in an incredible place. So can you talk to us about your journey within the squad and that journey that the squad is on?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, so going back to when I got my first cap, that was in 2018. And yeah, like you mentioned, like the program then was kind of just like in a place where I guess we all just, there wasn't much investment like going into it. And to look back now at like that time just seems crazy that we were even playing international rugby with like no funding and no backing. It like blows my mind. But yeah, I guess it was weird for me because I always, when I was in that environment, I aspired to be a professional rugby player and to want that to be my job, but then didn't really have anything to look up to towards. Do you know what I mean? Other than then obviously England. But for anyone in Wales, that was like a fairly unachievable thing. But yeah, I guess I kind of got a bit lucky with my first sort of year within the setup because one of the second rows picked up an injury in a game, and then I went from being traveling reserve to starting. And I guess like that's what elite sport's all about, is like taking your opportunities there. And yeah, I guess I took the opportunity, and then I ended up getting myself a starting jersey for the rest of that campaign, which was pretty surreal at the age of 19 to be in that position and to be like line out calling and stuff. Like I really did get thrown at the deep end. But yeah, there was a bit of a turbulent hatch, I suppose, since my first captain now, where we did feel like the program, I guess that we weren't thought about enough and that we weren't, I guess, like at the forefront of developing the game. And that was a pretty tough place to be in, honestly, as a player, you know, working 10-hour day and then traveling to Gloucester to play, like, that's really hard. And it was really hard. And at the time, like, this, I guess, is only so long you can do that for. And I think as a nation, we've been extremely lucky that things have turned around so drastically. And it's one of those ones where obviously we're very lucky and privileged to be in the position that we're in now. But equally, I think that was coming for a long, long time. But yeah, so then I got a part-time contract at the start of last year. That became a full-time contract going into the World Cup, which was absolutely game-changing for us as a squad. To be able to have all of us in full-time in the preparation for a World Cup was incredible, because it meant that everyone was on the same playing field. I think last Six Nations, you had half the squad on a contract, half the squad still working and coming and training in the evenings. That didn't really work particularly well. But yeah, going into the World Cup full-time was amazing. And then obviously getting another full-time contract at the start of this year and going through a full Six Nations campaign as a professional team has been, well, clearly, like, the proof's in the pudding kind of thing, you know? So yeah, it's been pretty, like, a whirlwind for the last sort of 6 months, I'd say.
Yeah, I think with you guys, like, it was so cool to see. Well, yeah, I guess we were, like, Scotland were in the same position. It was like England were professional and then the rest of us were like plodding along. But for, like, the change in you guys since going professional to that World Cup was insane. And actually, I think that was so trailblazing for all the other nations, because now actually we're in a situation that all the teams in the Six Nations are professional to some extent. Yeah. And I guess the other thing I could really relate to was we started off with that model where some people are professional, and when you're one of the ones that's not, like, mentally it's really hard. Like, you're doing as much training as everybody else, but
yeah,
you're also, yeah, working those long days.
Yeah, it creates a little bit of a divide in the team, I guess. Like, I got a part-time contract at the start last year, and it was like, it was weird because sometimes, like, I was in a position where, because I did online coaching, I could actually attend every session because I could work around it. So I was like, okay, I want to go to every session. But then also I was like, well, actually, I don't get paid to go to every session. But then I know that it's going to better me as a rugby player. And then maybe that means next time we get more contracts, then I'll be in a full-time contract. Like, it's just, yeah, it created a little bit of a divide. And then obviously you've got the girls who didn't even have any contract. And you just thought, well, I can't complain because they're coming in after a full day of work. You know, it's just like.
No, absolutely. And that's where it's so hard, because it's like your situation is not good, but you're like, well, I can't loan to you, because actually your situation is even worse. Yeah. So no, it's so good and, like, so cool. Yeah, how much you guys have come on. And I know that you personally have had, like, a bit of a shift in your approach to training. And so I remember, like, first following you on Instagram years ago and you were vegan. And, like, that was, something that, and you'd posted on your page and stuff. And, like, I don't know, I know from then to here your, like, approach to eating and training and stuff has changed massively. So, yeah, can you tell us about that journey?
Yeah. Do you know what? I'd forgotten about that. So I guess I've always been very sporty, and a lot of my life has revolved around activity and sport and stuff. But when I was younger, I definitely struggled with body image. I was slightly overweight when I was like sort of 10, 11, 12, and I always struggled with that. But then moving into sort of like GCSE PE, we had like a fitness like diary that we had to keep as part of our GCSE project in year 10. And me being the competitive person I am was like, I'm going to be the best at this fitness journal. And it made no sense. But I was like, okay, this means I'm going to concentrate on my nutrition. I'm going to like train twice a day. Like, this was just what I was going to do. I was like, okay. So for 12 weeks, that's what I did. And I ended up losing through 3 stone, which was, yeah, literally, I literally looked like a different person.
At what age was that?
14, 15.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it was mad. And like at the time I was like, whoa, like, you know when sometimes like 12 weeks goes by and then you look back and you think, as if that's been 12 weeks. That's how I felt at the time. But then I this is where I started to develop like body dysmorphia, because it all happened so quick that people were saying to me, oh, you look like, you look incredible, you look like you've lost weight and all of this. But in my head, I was still looked the same way as I looked 12 weeks before. And I think that's where the disassociation started to come with me in terms of that like negative relationship with nutrition and exercise, I suppose, because I was seeing it more of as a means of looking good and trying to get that validation from other people as opposed to performing in any sport. which became quite dangerous for me quite quickly because I was still competing at quite a high level of football. I was doing cross-country running, athletics at a high level. Like, there was so much going on that I needed energy for. But in actual fact, I was eating and training. Like, I just wanted to be as small as I possibly could. And that continued on for a while. And then I came across some like veganism things on Instagram, as you do, you know, scrolling through. And then the more you look at something, the more it pops up on your feed. So I was like, you know what? Why not? Like, nutrition wise, I'm going to try it. And in a weird way, I think that actually was the turning point for me in terms of having a better relationship with my nutrition. Because when you eat a vegan diet, especially 6-7 years ago, when there was no like alternative foods, you have to eat such a high volume of food to be able to get enough calories in to live. It taught me that like eating more wasn't a bad thing. And I was like literally in these massive bowls of like rice and veg and chickpeas and all of this to like make sure I got all my like nutrition in. But that started to plant the seed a little bit that like it's not a bad thing to eat more. But during that time as well, I did start playing rugby, and this is where the issue slightly came in terms of then when I didn't have very much nutrition knowledge in terms of protein recovery, all that kind of stuff. The diet I was eating was definitely not beneficial for me in terms of playing my rugby. But yeah, I've waffled on a bit.
No, but that's so interesting. And yeah, I don't know, it's crazy that that all came off the back of like a school project.
Yeah, it's insane. And it was definitely like this, that was the start of like my whole, what I would call like a fitness journey. And I literally remember some days I was getting up, going to the gym at 7 a.m, like doing an hour gym session of some kind where I was just kind of moving between all the machines, not really knowing what I was doing. Then I would do like a lunchtime activity club thing. Then I would like do a 5K run and then go to football training. Like, it was just, but then I wasn't supplementing that level of training with the correct nutrition. I was literally eating like a child's amount of food because I had no standing of it. I really, like, it was just a case of, oh, she, like, I've seen this person on Instagram, they eat that and they look good, so I will eat that as well.
Yeah. And I guess when, like, I think it shows how influential we are when we are like that age. And also, yeah, you're like, now our S&C coach is like, okay, you've done too much this week, like, you don't need to do this session. Whereas, yeah, when you're that age, you can literally like go to every single club, nobody's keeping tabs on.
Yeah. And that's the thing, is that I just wanted to do everything because I've always been very competitive and I like being good at things. So naturally I enjoyed sport. I wanted to do every sport I possibly could. And there was obviously like a expiry date on that. And there's only so long you can do that before you just burn yourself into the ground.
Yeah. So then I guess once you started playing rugby, how has your approach changed in that time to what you eat and how you train?
Yeah. So for a while, whilst I was playing, I was still a vegan, so everyone knew me as the vegan Gwen. Like, that was my name. But yeah, like I guess I first got exposed to proper strength and conditioning training. I think we were quite lucky that I was in the Ospreys academy, like the under 15s type development thing, and I think I was quite lucky that we were one of the few regions that had like some sort of S&C provision. So they were teaching us how to squat, teaching us how to clean at a very basic level, but that was like my first exposure to that, I suppose, and that's where I started to fall in love with like weight training a little bit more as well. But at that point still it hadn't clicked that like better performance in the gym equals better performance on the pitch. I was just going through the motions and enjoying it, I suppose. And then gradually, as I increased in my level, got brought into Wales squads, West Wales under 18s, sevens, that kind of stuff. Again, that exposure to strength and conditioning increased. Some nutrition information was being given out to us. And yeah, I think it was when I was around 17. So I'd been vegan for like 2 years. I played in a sevens tournament and I was exhausted. And I just remember like my family were having a barbecue and I was just like, I feel so drained. I'm knackered and I'm just watching everyone eat burgers and I want one. That's how I felt. So for about a week, I just sat on it and I was like, should I, shouldn't I? And I made the decision and I was like, okay, I think this is what's going to be good for my energy levels. Cause I'd hit a bit of a, like a spell where I wasn't feeling great at training and stuff. So then I tried some tuna with some pasta and I was like, okay, it's a good start. Then I had some eggs. Then I went to Nando's, had some chicken. And then, yeah, then basically I just was a meat eater again then, I suppose. But that incidentally coincided with about a month after that, I ruptured my left ACL. Now, I think there was many, many factors involved in that. So I don't think the change from veganism to meat was anything to do with that. But I think those two things happening at the same time meant that, one, like, I was naturally going to spend a lot more time in the gym, in like improving myself as an athlete. And yeah, having that flip in nutrition at the same time meant that I was eating more like whole protein sources as well. That saw me completely change my strength and my body composition, I guess, over the course of that injury. And that's what started that shift in mindset. But it's like, from then, even when I was 17, 18 to now, so many things have changed. It's just like, it's mind blowing, to be honest.
And now, are you in like a place that, well, I guess you talk a lot online about like lifting, like to be strong. And yeah. Have you seen the benefits of that on the pitch?
Yeah, definitely. And I think even for a long time back when I was, I would say from the age of like 18 to 21, I was probably like, in my mind, I knew that I should not concentrate on what my body looked like. I knew I should not be doing that, but I was still doing it. And it was really hard because some days I'd have days where I wouldn't look in the mirror and I'd be like, I'm fine. But I think there was still elements of constant comparison between, oh, well, this person plays rugby and they look like this. Why can't I look like that? And there was just, I didn't understand that doing that wasn't going to be very beneficial for me, because reality is I'm never going to look like that person because I'm not them, you know? And yeah, I guess for me, the biggest turning point was when I got my, well, part-time contract, even, I would say, because all of a sudden I had more time to rest and recover, focus on my nutrition, do extra gym sessions that I needed to concentrate on, all of that kind of thing. But it actually meant that my metabolism slowed down slightly because I was a PT before. So I was literally walking around the gym 10 hours a day, like constantly burning energy, didn't give my body a chance to recover and actually refuel and put on any muscle. So I started to see like a slow, steady increase on the scales. And I put on like 5 kilos, I think it was, in maybe 6 months. So like nice, steady increase. And then when I played in that Six Nations where I was a little bit heavier, I could see a direct correlation between my body weight increasing and my performance increasing. And I was like, okay. And also I was hitting numbers in the gym that I never even thought was possible. Like a year before, the thought of squatting 100 kilos like blew my mind. And then I was squatting 112.5 for five in like a working set. And I was like, this is insane. And then, yeah, I guess moving forward into World Cup and through to the end of last year, again, I put on a few more kilos, was ending up lifting even more weight in the gym and just constantly seeing that direct correlation between performance and increasing weight. And it did, something just clicked. And I was like, okay, gaining weight isn't a bad thing. And then I was like, there's so many other people that need to know that as well, because for so long, I thought the gaining weight was negative and it scared me, but actually I'm a rugby player. This is my job. This is what I'm paid to do. And I love being able to lift more in the gym. I love the athletic performance side of rugby as well. So it just changed my whole dynamic on how I value my body. And now it's, for me, it's far more about what it can do rather than what it looks like.
Yeah, no, that is so cool. I absolutely love that. And yeah, I think what you're doing now is so inspiring. Like if you can kind of tell younger girls coming through that that's what it can be like, then they don't have to go through that journey themselves. And it's like, I guess it's not until you gain the weight and you've seen the benefit on the pitch that you could say like, oh no, actually this is a really positive thing. Because we do kind of get fed like exercise to lose weight, like being skinny is like what we're all meant to want to do, whereas actually as a rugby player, like, yeah, it's not beneficial.
Yeah. And there was a long time where like that was conflicting in my head. Like I wanted to get heavier and grow and like lift more, but then there was just like some kind of mental barrier that was like telling me to not do that. And then like, oh, I'm going on holiday, I want to look skinny for that holiday, so maybe I'll just eat less. Like it was just like a constant battle, whereas now I'm just like, obviously I have bad days still, but it's far less frequent. Like my bad days now are maybe a bit like, oh, like I maybe ate two burgers instead of one last night, like that wasn't probably the best idea, but do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like rather than seeing it as like, oh, okay, I've overeaten, I need to punish myself for that, like it's a very different mindset now. It's all about like balance and adjusting to things. So I know that like this morning I had a cinnamon bun when I was out for coffee. That means that maybe at lunch I'll eat less carbs. Like that's literally it. There's no, oh, you've got to punish yourself like for that. It's, yeah, which was very much where my mindset was when I was younger.
Yeah, that is so powerful. And that brings us on really nicely to Built for Purpose. So can you tell us about that? And I guess how has your mentality inspired what you do there?
Yeah, so I guess, well, I did my degree in strength and conditioning. And I, like I said, I've had a bit of a passion for that side of the game as well. And then I came out of uni, graduated, and then decided to start my own personal training business, where I just worked with general population people, which was really rewarding, actually, because I've always thought that I wanted to work with elite performers, but actually teaching someone who's never been able to squat before in their life to squat, and then see the difference that can make in their confidence and in their own body image was really powerful. And I worked with so many different people and different personalities, which was really positive for me as well. But yeah, I guess I think I wanted to specialize in helping other female rugby players to, like you say, go through that journey that I've been through, but hopefully with less like heartache through it, and just not have to experience the lows that I did, and so that they can just sort of get the good bit, you know. But yeah, that's where Built for Purpose came from, because I ended up saying it a lot to a lot of my clients. I was trying to explain to them that, like, your body is built for purpose. So if you're lifting 100 kilos on a bar, like, your body is built for that. Your body isn't, like, necessarily built to fit in this clothes and this clothes. It doesn't matter. Like, so yeah, I was saying that a lot. And then I was sat there thinking, what could I call my online business that I wanted to, like, specialize in? So yeah, I was like, Built for Purpose. And then that's just kind of stuck. So, and it just encompasses everything for me that whole journey that I've been through is about, basically.
Yeah, you're so right, though. Like, our body is built to do things, not to, like, look good and what are, like, perceived look good in, like, one holiday pick or whatever. Like, it's, yeah, that's so cool. I love that. For people that wanted to get involved in Built for Purpose, is it, like, do you just have athletes on board, or do you still work with the general population as well?
At the minute, I work with people, basically women's rugby players that are playing at any level. So it doesn't matter if you're literally just wanting to start out in rugby and you think, oh, I could do with a gym program that helps me get into that and build confidence in that as well, because that's the underpinning thing for me. It's about strength and conditioning programs or gym programs that build confidence. So that's why I run a group program, for, because for me it makes it more affordable for people, but it also builds a community for them to sort of chat to like-minded people as well. But then I do offer one-to-one coaching as well, which can open up to, like, the wider general population of people, anyone that wants to sort of improve, but again with that ethos of building confidence and wanting their self-image and their value to improve, as well as their physical abilities, I suppose.
Boss. And I think as well, as rugby players, like, women's rugby still, I feel like it's still a place that you only really have S&C access if you're at that elite level. Like, I know, I don't know the club situation in Wales, but definitely in Scotland, like, it's only once you're involved in the Scottish Pathways that you have access to those resources. So that's so cool that, yeah, you can fill that gap a little bit.
Yeah, that's a huge point, actually. Like, there's such a gap at the minute between club rugby and international rugby. And like you said, if you don't get brought into a pathway, then the gap just gets bigger and bigger. But equally, how are you meant to get into a pathway if you don't get the provision just to get you there, you know? So, yeah. And it's such a hard thing for me to, like, sell the value of what I'm trying to do. But it's like, you don't know until you've got it. Because the way I try and see it is, like, if someone signs up, I could say, like, I'll give you a 5-day trial. If someone signs up and they have it, and then that's only then that you understand the value of it. And then if I was like, okay, your 5-day trial's up, and took it away, then they'd be like, I actually think I really need that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you've actually got to start it. But I think, yeah, a lot of people have a lot of, like, limiting beliefs in terms of that as well. And they're like, that's not for me. Like, I'm never going to make it as a rugby player. It doesn't matter. It's not just about you being a rugby player. It's about you growing as a person as well.
Yeah. And I hope as well with that, like, we'll see in the future as rugby is getting professional, like, you'll be valued as a rugby player at every level that you play at. It won't be like grassroots or international. Actually, there'll be, like, lots of levels in between that, like we see in the men's game.
Yeah, definitely. Like, without a grassroots game, then the elite game wouldn't exist. So I think a lot more, like, thought and conscious effort needs to go into that, in terms of, I think, like, people need to understand their value within a rugby community, like, because that's what it is. It's like a community, it's like a family. And not long ago, actually, I went to the WRU Community Awards, and it was so humbling to see like people being presented awards for the time and effort and energy that they put in for free into grassroots level rugby. Like, it was one of the best evenings I've been to, and it was just so nice to come out of my bubble of like Wales women and just seeing like all of the people that are the reason that we can perform where we are now.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that is so cool. And with that, so do you live in Wales, but you're traveling to Gloucester?
Yeah. So I live not far from Cardiff. So that's like near where we train for Wales. And yeah, traveling back and forth to Gloucester at the minute.
And what is that round trip? Is it brutal?
It's, for me, about 90 minutes each way-ish. On a bad day, let's say. About an hour and 20 on a good day. obviously each way. But it's one of those things where it's like I've pretty much always done it. And for a while I was traveling like Swansea to Gloucester, which is 2 hours each way. So it's not like the worst thing in the world. But I actually haven't been to Gloucester that often this season because I've been injured the whole time. So like in a weird way, it's kind of a good thing that I live here where I do, because I'm like 15 minutes away from where we train with Wales, which is where I've been based most of the time.
And that brings us on nicely, like wanting to ask about your kind of current journey you're on with this injury. So if I've got it right, so you came back from a significant ankle injury to compete in Six Nations, but unfortunately, like really heartbreakingly in that opening game, you suffered a knee injury. So yeah. I guess, can you tell us about that and where you're at with all that?
Yeah. So I broke my ankle pretty badly in December, which obviously coming back from the World Cup, I was gutted about because I was so excited to be playing club rugby. And I'd say I was probably playing some of the best rugby I've ever played. So it was just a little bit just like, I think then it was disappointing. And I was like, okay, this has happened. I got like thrown at the deep end, ended up in hospital, had surgery. 4 days later, I came home. And it was hard because I had like all of my independence taken away from me because I was in a cast. But as soon as I got through that first 3 weeks, I could walk in a boot. It was, the end was in sight. And I had like a 3.5 month time frame to get back for the Six Nations. So I was like, hey, as far as timings go, this isn't bad. Like, it'll be fine. And so I always looked forward to that Ireland game as that is going to be my return. And I worked probably the hardest I've ever worked in my life to be able to get back for that. It was like 4 days a week, like 2 gym sessions a day sometimes. As my rehab like intensified, the rehab became like a gym session. It was like crazy, obviously intense conditioning, that kind of stuff. And then I guess when it got to like 2 weeks out from that Ireland game, it all started to become very real because I was like, okay, I'm training again. Like, I'm not injured anymore. And when that happened so quick, like the identity change from being like, I'm an injured athlete to I'm a rugby player, was it just all happened very, very quick. And I spoke to the sports psych about it and like trying to get over this fear of re-injury, because I genuinely was like scared that my ankle was going to break again. I think because it was so quick, like coming back. And so I spoke to the sports psych, got over that fear of like, when I received a tip, I thought I was going to break my ankle. Obviously, quite irrational, but there we are, got over that. So yeah, a lot of hype going into that Ireland game. And then 6 minutes in, I just come out of the line, probably a little bit too hard. And then the player at the back stepped inside me. And then, yeah, just literally like that, knee gone. And I, like I mentioned before, I've done my other ACL. So I knew instantly, I was like, I've just done my ACL.
Or like you knew in the moment.
It's just that feeling, like you just know. And I didn't know how, like I didn't know to what extent and how bad I had like done it, but I was like, yeah, it's gone. And I think for me, like if you've seen any of the pictures like of me on the floor and stuff, like it's awful to look back at, because the physio was actually saying to me, like, when there's cameras, like you're going to want to just calm down a little bit because your face is like a picture at the minute.
No, I remember watching it and just like, obviously I'd seen all your rehab stuff online and just been so heartbroken, because like rugby is just so, it is so brutal sometimes. And yeah,
it was honestly, like in that moment, I think it was like, I would describe that as probably one of the lowest points of my life, because I literally just felt like my world had just crashed. Like, and there's so many things that start going through your head and you don't think rationally whatsoever when you're in that moment. So I was literally just saying to the physios, like, no, I can't do this again. I can't do it again. Knowing that I was potentially going to be out for like 8-9 months. And so yeah, basically got walked off the pitch. I was like, I'm not getting on the stretcher. So walked off the pitch, went into the physio room, and then they're like assessing my knee. And I was like, just don't say anything to me, because when I had my other ACL tested, they were like, yeah, it's not your ACL. And it was. So I just didn't want them to tell me anything. I was like, let's just wait till we get it scanned. But it was just the biggest emotional roller coaster for the next like 3 days. The only way I can describe it is like a breakup. Like I was just, I'd be sat in the kitchen here drinking my coffee, absolutely fine. And then I'd look at something and I'd be like, just start crying out of nowhere. And I think I just had to like give myself a bit of a talking to and be like, okay, you've had your time. You've cried about this. Yes, it sucks. Like this is like probably, it's not a great hand to be dealt to back-to-back like surgery injuries, but there's worse things that have happened in the world. It's fine. And then, yeah, sort of when I had that like moment to myself, I think things have been like much better since then. And then, yeah, I had my surgery 2 weeks ago today, actually. And the first week after that, horrendous. I hated it. I really don't like being stuck inside, not being able to be active at all, like not even being able to go for a walk, having to rely on people. Like, I really don't like that. And that put me in a bit of a hole. But yeah, I guess like finding a bit of a purpose within it all, which for me, I think is like sharing my experience. Like, if I can share the way I'm feeling or going through injuries, that helps me be able to feel like, okay, well, if I help one person, that's positive. So I've been trying to like use that as an outlet in the same way I did with my ankle. And that definitely has helped. But yeah, I'm definitely feeling a lot more positive about it now. Like being able to get back to training and start my rehab. And I do feel very grateful for the circumstance I'm in. Like, this is my job. It could be a lot worse. I could be rehabbing this injury with a full-time job. And I actually really enjoy the gym and I enjoy rehab. So I'm just, yeah, excited to get the whole process underway, really.
I think that is so powerful. Like, being injured is so, can be so isolating. So I think you sharing your journey, like, athletes will see that and they'll be able to relate. And with you having done your other ACL, is like, does that make it easier in terms of, you know, what's coming through, or is that challenging mentally in terms of like, it's a long injury ultimately?
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit of both. Like, my other ACL, my rehab wasn't great. Like, obviously the setup wasn't anywhere near the level of professionalism that it is now. So I was maybe in 2-3 days a week max in the evening. Like, it really wasn't anywhere near, honestly. Like, I'm going to be in like a full-time rehab program essentially, which is hopefully going to accelerate my rehab much quicker. It took me 11 months after surgery to get back from my last one. And I'm hoping it's going to take, you know, 4 or 5 months less than that this time. So it's just a case of trusting that I've got the facilities and I've got the staff and I've got everyone that's going to, you know, push me forward there. But it's a bit of a weird one, actually, because I actually can't remember a huge amount about post-surgery and the rehab with my other knee. And I was saying to the physio, I was like, I think my brain has just like wiped that out and been like, we don't want to remember that. That wasn't a nice time. but yeah, it's really weird. But obviously I've actually seen Meg Webb and Alicia Butchers go through their ACL rehab, because they were in the early stages when I was rehabbing my ankle. So everything they've done is what I'm going to be doing. So it kind of gave me like a preview of what I was going to be doing. Yeah.
I do think it's freaky at the moment, like how many injuries there's been this season off the back of the World Cup. Like, it seems like so many teams have been impacted. And I don't know if it is like how long our season's been with the World Cup, if it's how quickly we've all professionalized and our training loads increased, but it seems like it's not like normal.
Yeah, it is scary. And it's like, I've like questioned it so many times. Like, I think, like you said, it could be, it's been a very long season. Like, most of us started pre-season in July and it's basically going to be a year long season. And then you've also got the fact of, yeah, like you said, we're all professional. Like, overnight we've just become professional and we've been thrown into a full-time program. How do our bodies react to that? But equally, I think the more exposure women's rugby gets, of course more injuries are going to be in the mainstream media. And like, maybe previously these injuries were going on, but just no one knew about them because no one spoke about women's rugby, you know. That's another, like,
yeah, that's so true.
Yeah, and I think it's just maybe a combination of them all. But I think, like, it's evident that a lot more research needs to go into, like, injuries within women's rugby, because all of, even, like, physical testing data, all of the stuff that's done on within rugby is actually, like, around men. And I did my dissertation on, like, physical testing data within women, and there was 6 papers in the whole world. That was it.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And half of them were incomplete. Half of them were like just speed testing or just this. Like, we need to have multiple papers of like different biomechanics, like jump tests, speed tests, conditioning, everything. But like, there just isn't that data at the minute. And I don't know, it's just going to take a long time to catch up with that kind of side of the game.
Yeah, definitely. And I think with what's going on with women's football as well at the moment, like, it's not just rugby specific. Yeah. Hopefully that gap in the data does get filled so that as we like move on with professionalisation, there's less and less of these, yeah, these big injuries.
Yeah, definitely.
And what would your advice be to other athletes going for the same thing at the moment?
I think to just try, and it's easier said than done, but try to view things in terms of what you can do rather than what you can't do, because it is really easy for someone to be like, well, I can't run, I can't walk, I can't do this. But just concentrate on what you can do and try to see the time that you're off with an injury as an opportunity to get better at other things. And I think in a weird way, I'm grateful that I had my ankle injury before this injury, because it helped me grow that mindset towards an injury. So like, really thinking about, okay, how can I develop myself as a person, not just an athlete? How can I better my isolated skills while I can't walk? I can sit down on a box, I can do passing, I can do this and that. But having that in a short-term injury, like a three, four-month injury, has helped me now be able to have that mindset for the eight-month injury. So that would be the first thing. And I think the second thing is to just try to stay involved. Like, I think with my other ACL, I really isolated myself. I tried to withdraw from the rugby environment. I didn't really want to be in and around it, but trying to play some kind of role this time around has been really positive for me. And like I said, whether that means sharing what I'm going through on social media, that's still to me playing a role in growing the women's game, in helping other people. So yeah, just trying to stay involved and not pulling yourself, you know, withdrawing yourself from spending time with friends and with teammates.
Yeah, class. And that actually brings us on nicely. I wanted to ask about, you're an ambassador for Loose Heads, which is like mental health organization in rugby. Yeah. So what inspired you to get involved with that? And also, yeah, what is your advice for athletes looking after their mental health? I guess you've covered some of the bits there.
Yeah. So yeah, with Loose Heads, I think their mission is incredible. It's to get a mental health lead into every rugby club within the world. And I think mental health is such a component of rugby that's overlooked. More importantly, it's a component of physical health that's overlooked, because people seem to think that like physical health is a separate thing to mental health. But I explained it to someone earlier as like, mental health unlocks physical health, because especially within sport, like if I'm not feeling good, I'm not going to perform well on the training pitch or on the playing field. And they come hand in hand so much that physical health help, like physical exercise helps mental health helps physical health. Like it's all one and the same thing, I think. But the amount of resource and time and energy and effort within a training week that goes into mental health is very, very small, whether that be on a team scale or on an individual scale. And I think, you know, Loose Heads' sort of slogan is tackle the stigma. And unfortunately, there is still a big stigma around rugby being the tough macho sport that it is. You just kind of, you know, everything's about aggression and physicality, and maybe talking about your mental health is the opposite of that. And it's just finding that balance and the conflict. And I think a lot of people, that's something that they struggle with. So getting on board with a charity like Loose Heads has been awesome for me. And it's because of people like them that my eyes have been open to what mental health actually means.
No, I love that. Final question. So this is something that we've asked all our guests. So it's to finish this sentence. So success means?
Doing the best that you can do on any given day with the circumstances that you're given.
Love that. And that's so relevant for like what you're going through right now.
Yeah, definitely. Because it changes. It changes all the time. Like success to me, like, last week was getting out of bed, going outside and sitting in the sun. That's it. Whereas like success in 3 months time is going to be able to run 3x10 100-meter tempo. You know, so different.
No, that's so true.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the pod. Absolutely love that conversation. I think what you're doing is amazing for like body image, for what you're going through with rehab and sharing that experience with others. And I know that's going to be so powerful to so many athletes out there.
Thank you, I really appreciate that, and I've enjoyed the conversation as well. It's been really good.
Cool, thanks so much. Anything you believe you can be.